Senior Focus.
Welcome everyone, it's Anne-Marie and I'm your host for Senior Focus for this program, and welcome to the new year and the new look of our program. Last week I was talking about well-being and in a personal sense, and this time I'm actually following on with an issue that's affecting quite a few seniors. I'm getting stories in from people in the community. People have perhaps not been confident in approaching their family to talk through the issue, but it's around the issue of dating sites. And while a lot of young people are on phones and on sites doing all sorts of things with their credit card or debit card, older folk doing this aren't always familiar with some of the pitfalls. And it appears that some of the sites that look very legitimate are in fact not as safe as they look, and they may make claims to be safe and so on, and be protecting your data and all the rest. But then comes the sad part, where suddenly when they're checking their bank statement, they see against the card a whole heap of transactions that they didn't approve of or authorise. And this is the problem. The scammers will come in for the kill and they'll just keep taking money, and it might be $1.49 here and then $40 there and then $39 there and so on. And they'll just go on and on as long as the money is there, until the money runs out. And in contacting banks, people find the bank's first response is to cut up the card, get rid of the card. And then the second response is to actually try and work out if any of these payments are still pending. And if they are still pending, then it's obviously one of the courses of action that you can take is to actually go back to the sites and point out that you've authorised certain payments, but these other payments are not authorised, and you're putting them in dispute with the bank. You're taking that matter up with the bank, and the payments are in dispute. And by announcing that and asking them to explain themselves to refund and so on, then you're actually putting the ball into their court. And there is a procedure where matters are pending and the money hasn't left your account yet. Usually they have 10 business days to respond in some way to your email, and then after that the banks will actually step in and take more action, which they can do through the International Card Organisational Framework. It then can take several weeks after that too. If there's money that's been taken and taken without authorisation, it will take several weeks then to get that money back. If it was just pending, then obviously it comes back much faster. But overall, people do succeed so long as they've got some idea what they did, and they've written down the ideas, or they've kept the emails where the transactions are there, where the receipts or the original order or whatever is able to be identified. So a lot depends on how much organisation you've done at your end and how willing you are to follow it through and be systematic. And of course it pays to send copies of any of your emails to the companies concerned that are behind these sites, keeping a record of those transactions and getting those to your bank, forwarding those emails. Now, for some people, they don't necessarily know how to go about it because they don't know exactly the sort of language to use. It doesn't help to be furious and presenting a tirade on paper or threatening them or whatever. It's just not going to be effective. But there are ways of doing it, and I think the banks are really, often banks are very supportive these days. They're a lot more supportive than they were, say, 2 years ago. I think the scamming is more widespread since COVID and cleverer in the way it's done, and so there's more kind of support available out there for people. Now, it's really important to think about how you use cards online, and one of the things that you can do to protect yourself is only to put as much money on the card as you need for the exact transaction. So when that transaction is finished, your card is back to zero, and so whatever anybody does, they can't take anything more off it. The other thing is having good security on your phone or on your laptop is really important. So in the past, people have relied on cheap kind of protection, download for free certain software, and that'll do the job. However, the scammers are getting very sophisticated, and the malware they can put on your phone or on your laptop can actually stay there for some time, and more events can happen further down the track when with your next card. So it doesn't pay to be lax at all about the security. You need the best there is out there. And even in that game, you have to be careful whose security you get and how you get it. And if you have any doubts about these things, you can talk to the bank directly, and also go to firms like Geeks on Wheels who have a website, and you can click on that. And there are some stores that actually do the cleaning of the phones and clear out any malware and so on, and actually will help set up better secure software for you. So while you may think, oh, I'm never going to do this or I don't need this, you'd be surprised actually how tempting it is and how easy it is and how many people are in fact caught up in this. It's very widespread. So it's not something to be hidden or not talked about or embarrassed about. It's something that is really worthwhile getting on top of and just recognizing that, yes, it may be the modern way to meet people is to date online, but there are some sites that are safer than others, and those are the ones that you want to head for. So getting advice about this from the banks is a really good idea, and you mightn't have thought about that in the beginning, but the banks themselves, they know all the dodgy sites because they see all the evidence piling up from all the people whose cards have been scammed, and they're the ones who are busy trying to recover the funds back. So they know which ones to avoid, and they know which ones are okay and have a credible record. So do get advice. Do take advantage of this. Nobody will think anything of your request for help in that regard. You won't be joked about or laughed at or anything. People are there to help, and they want to help, and they don't want to be dealing with these kinds of scam environments and paper trails that go on for weeks. It's in no one's interest, and it's certainly frustrating, and it's very time consuming. So be warned and do look out in case you get to the point where you suddenly think, oh, I've got nothing to do this afternoon. I've always wondered about these sites and start going on them because they're very easily set up to entice you. They are free initially, and so you might think, oh, well, I've got nothing to lose because it's free. And you get involved, but then they want for you to send a message to a certain person that looks like they could be a match for you. They want your credit card details. Or some of them want your details anyway and they say, oh, we won't bill you unless you've been on the site for a month or something. You've just got to be very, very aware that there's lots of enticement and lots of entrapment, and also be very aware that there's lots of lies and stretched truth, because sometimes the software being used is not very accurate. So you might find that somebody who you told lives a kilometre away is actually living 43 k's away, or it may be that the person doesn't look anything like their photograph, or they are misrepresenting themselves in other ways, and really these sites don't have any control over that aspect at all. I mean, they try to act as deterrent to stop this, but they don't really have control of the accuracy of the data that is being given out. So when they're sending your emails saying so-and-so is sending a message to you, or so-and-so's on a site waiting for you, click here and join so you can get their messages, I mean, they may well not be there at all, and it may just be a complete ruse. Now, it's this time of year where I guess people do think about summer romance, and they do think about what would they do if they met somebody, or how would their life change? And I'm going to suggest that sitting down with a good book, a good romantic read, can be just more satisfying than trailing through your emails and sending off copious replies and requests trying to get your money back. So for this session, I've chosen for the music the album Blue, Joni Mitchell's album, which I've always found is one of my favourites. So sit back and listen to one of her songs and relax, and we'll be together again very soon.
Just before our love got lost, you said, I am as constant as a northern star, and I said, constantly in the darkness, where's that at? If you want me, I'll be in the bar, on the back of a cartoon coaster, in a blue TV screen light. I drew a map of Canada.
Section, I'm going to talk about a few of the things that we might consider amenity values in our communities, because these are the things that influence people's decision to stay or leave in a place, to come into a community, or to invest in community, like actually give up time as a volunteer. And so two of these issues are transport and trees, and others include recreational zones, that might be parks, or it might be a sailing school environment where there's a bay where people can learn to sail. Certainly these are all sorts of things that are very precious. Blue and green spaces, we're going to have not really enough to cater for a growing population in some parts of Auckland. In other places, our blue and green spaces are under threat because they're being reduced in size and impact by development. Trees are being chopped. Parks, maybe really small pocket parks, being sold off because they are not required any longer for public works or something of that sort. And we've seen a few examples of this over the last 2 years, and I know that often tempers run high, people, feelings are very high, people get very, very worked up. But it's difficult to deal with, say, the council as a whole, because there are so many different elements involved, and even your local board may have limited power in terms of stopping an action or starting an action. So even when you are knowledgeable about the system, it is not easy to know where to land a definitive piece of feedback that might actually alter the outcome. And that's something that does concern quite a lot of people in Auckland, and it's not something you can deal with easily. It is, it does fall into that category of where people are reacting, saying, oh, democracy's dead. But it isn't as simple as that, and often there are opportunities to give feedback, but people don't know about them. Sometimes the feedback comes in at a difficult time of the year when people are actually trying to have a holiday and they're not really thinking about organising their pen and paper to write in about something. It often happens too quickly, so they only become aware of the real issue just before the final closing period. And sometimes it's the sheer volume of the number of issues that people need to respond to. So there are a lot of big changes around at the moment in local government, like Three Waters, like the rewriting of the Resource Management Act, and this new bill about urban development as to how much can be built, how close to the boundaries. It's difficult if you're trying to respond to all of these things when you're not an expert, to do the research, to actually work out what you think, to consider what else might work, and get it all down on paper and get it in, and then wonder, well, I'm only one voice, and am I really going to be taken any notice of? How does it really work? So one of the things that we're trying to do this year is actually have more live discussion amongst people on a panel. And we hope once we're in our new building that that will be possible. It's not that far away. So in the meantime, we're still at Point Chev, and I'm here in the studio talking with you. I would like to have guests in the studio. I'd like to be able to ring people up and get opinions and so on. But at the moment, we have got sort of a limited environment as we just prepare to get ready to move. It's the biggest move that we'll have done in 35 years, and it is very exciting that we're going into our own building. So going back to trees and transport, transport is the most expensive part of funding local government in Auckland. So about 40% of rates money is going to Auckland Transport. And if you are an average homeowner paying about $3,000 in rates, 40% of that 3,000 is going to Auckland Transport. And then you have to ask yourself, now, how can I benefit from this? Can I get any of my rates money back in terms of how I use public transport? Can I, in fact, cut my carbon footprint by using public transport more often? And even though lots of people have gold cards who are seniors and qualify for one, and even for the community services card, they don't actually make a lot of use of the transport, not as much as they could. And so I'm suggesting that in days of old, I can remember back in the 70s, we had carless days, and that was how we managed the oil crisis then. Now we have a climate change crisis, and voluntarily we could cut down our carbon footprint. We could actually look to use the access to transport in a productive way to reduce our carbon footprint and make a difference. And one couple I met recently in my local area, out walking, they were telling me how they have actually instigated a walk to the supermarket trip once a week, and that in 18 months they've actually walked the distance from Auckland to Wellington. They'd actually calculated it. And they're quite proud of the impact of what they are doing. And that's just a choice they've made. I guess they don't necessarily have to walk home. They can get an Uber home or a local bus. But just walking one way was quite significant. Everyone needs to think about what they can do, but you see the difference in Auckland in the transport sector when the schools are closed, the roads are not clogged between 3 and 3.45, otherwise driving you nuts. And I know coming in here, if I'm making a program in the afternoon, I do have to get in by about 1 to be sure of being able to organise and be properly on deck to record. Because if I leave it later, I could get just stuck in a jam where I can't make headway. I might be doing less than 2Ks an hour. Almost feels like I'm going backwards. So these are some of the frustrations that I know many people face. And you would think that during the day, outside of peak hours, it wouldn't be so bad. But it sometimes can be the very worst time. So that's, you know, something to think about in your planning for the year, how you could be more creative in using public transport, because it's something that you can save time on in the short and the long term if you're able to work on the bus, if you're able to do emails on the bus, if you're able to do texts on the bus and read books. You can't do that while you're driving the car. You shouldn't be doing that. So it is a way of using time effectively, and I find the bus is not that much further time-wise. It's not taking up that much more time than the car. However, what does happen that's different is the walking at the beginning and at the end. And that journey of walking to the bus stop and walking back afterwards is part of my health program. So I do get the benefit out of that. It's really quite incredibly positive when I look over 6 months how many kilos have disappeared. And that regular exercise is helping with lowering blood pressure and blood sugar levels and cholesterol and so on. So if you need to have a regular exercise program and you haven't got a walking buddy, walking on a main street to a bus route is relatively safe, it's relatively secure, and it's easy to do. It may not be so good after 10 o'clock at night, but if you organise yourself, you could do it quite well during the day. And it doesn't have to be every day. So as I suggested, if you picked 1 or 2 days a week that you went carless and used public transport as an experiment, you might be very surprised how much you save and how much productivity you can achieve in the time frame. Now, trees, I'll switch back to trees. And trees have been a subject of a number of battles, and we still haven't got an answer to what the structure and the strategy should be to protect our trees, because the protection that we had was taken away by central government. So under a national government, and the law changed, the protection that was there previously went. And since that gap appeared, we have lost about 20% of the mature trees in Auckland that we needed to keep, because it's so easy to chop these big ones down that get in the road when a development's going ahead. But it takes 30 years to grow a mature tree and to provide all of the ecosystem for all the plants and animals that depend on that tree. You just can't replace it. They're treasures, and they're very precious. And so we need to work out a better system. We need a new law enacted by the Parliament, but we also need something in the Resource Management Act to rewrite that would actually help local councils and local boards retain those trees that are considered safe and worth keeping into the future. It shouldn't be up to individuals, and if people can manage to demolish and damage severely mature trees, so they have to be removed, there should be extreme penalties so that people really get the message, because it seems just too easy and it doesn't cost very much when you consider the multi-millions involved in a development. To get stung with a small fine is just a bit of a joke. A slap with a wet bus ticket is the phrase, I think. So we do need to see change in this area, and the Tree Council and various groups like Forest and Bird have been very active over the last year, and in some suburbs there have been some success, and some Pahutukawa trees have been saved, like in Mairangi Bay on the North Shore. But not everywhere has seen that kind of success. So what I would ask you to do this year is to have a look at the trees in your neighbourhood. See if there are any that look like they might be the subject of a felling in the near future. If they're just one tree on their own, if they're on an empty section, or they're on the edge of a development, just try and find out whether they are actually in the register of trees that are protected, or whether there is some public interest that can be generated around saving them, and see what you can do. And we'll be very interested to hear from any of you that want to let us know about these matters, because we have had interviews with people from the Tree Council, from Dr. Mills Barton, and we'll continue to have these sorts of people on our program giving us updates as we go along in 2022. So thank you for listening today. I myself get very stimulated by all the stuff that's going on out there and all the things that are impacting on seniors, and I think that it's a very exciting time for us because we've got more choices than we've ever had. But at the same time, it's quite scary because we don't want to move too much. And so if we move and we find suddenly a big development's going up and it's blocking our sun, or if we move and suddenly the bus route changes and our partner can't get to the bus stop anymore, these kinds of things are really disconcerting because it's quite a big stressful thing to move. It is at any age, but it's particularly more so as you age. And so setting up ways in which you can prepare yourself for aging well and then have it all explode in your face is not really my idea of well-being. So we will be interested in finding out how people have done their research, why they've chosen to go to different places, and that'll be what we look for in the next few programs. Thank you for listening.